going out. So, yeah. Okay, I think we should start. In front of me, I have the agenda with me. But before we do, before we deal with the agenda, I'll request that we do apologies first from my side. It's Honorable Zulu and Honorable De Villiers. They did not give us reasons why they're not part of this meeting. My Chemaite was here, but he had to leave because they are dealing with a bill. But he signed the attendance register, I'm told. And another thing that I also need to raise is that we need a quorum for this meeting because we have to consider and adopt reports. We do have a quorum. That's good. Thank you. And then, are there any apologies? Honorable?
Chair, Mr. De Villiers phoned me this morning to say he's going to a meeting for higher education, also scheduled at 10, and he apologized because he was asked to be here. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Daros, but I have indicated Mr. De Beer's apology. I think that procedure as well, normally what we do, we introduce ourselves so that we understand who is here, at what capacity. Let me start. My name is Peace Mabe. I'm from Gauteng Province. I'm the chair of this committee. Members?
I'm Mam Magala from KZN, member of this committee.
I'm Nolikhando Tukane from the Eastern Cape, member of the committee.
Morning, everyone. My name's Daryl Worth, and I'm from the Free State Province and a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, members and officials. I am Gauta Mokhoro. I'm a member of this committee from the Northern Cape. Thank you.
My name is Chris Jones. I'm an intern with PMG from the U.S.
I'm Hilton Donson, a researcher with the Medical Research Council, in particular the program called Safety and Peace Promotion.
I am Alvaro Gana from Parliamentary Communication Services.
I'm Rustam Ali from Information and Content Development in Communications of Parliament.
You're all welcome. Then we have two items for consideration. The first one is the briefing by Medical Research Council on provincial overview on issues pertaining to the violence with respect to children and youths in South Africa. I think also one needs to mention that today is the International Children's Day. Maybe immediately after that we'll have to deal with that as well. The second agenda item is the consideration and adoption of outstanding reports that we will do in committee immediately after the presentation. However, before I hand over to you, sir, for the presentation, I must indicate that I had to wake up at 1 o'clock to read. I wanted to read the presentation, but only to find that the presentation was not there. You know, I had a file and I thought that the presentation was circulated, because anything that has got medical research on it is a technical document. You know, it's not something, it's not a by the way issue. It needs you to go through it so that you are able to make meaningful inputs. So I'm disappointed about the fact that we did not get that on time. I know members would also share the same sentiments with me. However, because you're not from the department, we'll let that go. We'll give you an opportunity to go through the presentations, and if members are in a position of asking questions or contributing, we'll then open for that. But if they feel that, maybe we should then consider that at a later stage, because we're not taking any decision It's just information sharing. Yeah, but then I'm going to hand over to you to do the presentation, then we'll see what happens after that. Okay? Over to you.
Are you doing it physically?
Quite
interpersonal violence scourges within South Africa. In terms of morbidity, that means people that don't die as a result of injuries. Injuries is really the top, or if you want to look at the bottom part of the whole injury pyramid. Then 3.5 million people annually seek health care for non-fatal injuries. 2 million serious crimes, and plus minus 55,000 reported rapes of women and girls. Sometimes the estimate is 9 times higher. And there's widespread victimization. There might be a bit of a positive thing to all this, in that we've seen in some instances that the particular trends in homicide is coming down as traffic goes up. But because we do not particularly have systems in the country that is complete, we have some systems, but we don't have completed systems to give us the bigger picture of things. So we, for example, know what happens in the city of Durban, but we don't know what's happened to the south of Durban or to the north of Durban in terms of injury data and violence data in a collective way where we can make inroads in terms of interpretations and analysis. So the problem that we then face with in the country, and I'm saying this at the backdrop because inclusive of all these is children and women who find themselves at a status of, or at low status of power, if we look at all hierarchies of age and of gender. So violence and injuries are the second leading cause of death and lost disability adjusted life years in South Africa. That's behind HIV/AIDS. For years, injuries was separated, but if we look at a collective injury burden, then that is certainly the case. South Africa's injury death rate, as I mentioned before, is nearly twice the global average. The high injury death rate is driven mainly by interpersonal and gender-based violence, followed by traffic injuries, self-inflicted injuries such as suicide, and other unintentional injuries arising from fires, drownings, and falls. So we certainly have a multifaceted burden of injury. And violence is profoundly gendered, with young men aged between 15 and 29 years disproportionately engaged in both violence as victims and as perpetrators. They've got, some people say they got, they are two-faced, and others say they've got the same face, they just change their roles. So if somebody had done a deed of violence to me, perhaps I want to have revenge and retribution. Half of the female victims of homicides are killed by the intimate male partners, and the country has a especially high rate of rape of women and girls. The social factors driving the problem includes poverty, unemployment, these things are all known to us, patriarchal notions of masculinity, vulnerabilities of families and exposures to violence in childhood, as well as widespread access to firearms, alcohol, and drug misuse, and a weak culture of enforcement and failure to uphold safety as a basic right. So the government, in our view, would and should identify reduction in violence and injuries as a key goal to develop and implement a comprehensive strategy against these scourges. Having said that, we don't say you must do. We have an approach in our research environment that we do. So we have a mission within the MRC, building a healthy nation through research. So our mandate is research. So we can inform, we can share, we can do interventions that can prove best practice and build relationships with committees and groups such as yourself in order to keep you abreast and informed around the decisions you make. So my next slide says violence can be prevented, like polio and other public health threats. Violence is a preventable disease. It's not a disease, it's a condition of the mind, of the state of the nation. Be careful what I say, Parliament. The state of how things are in our communities. And then there's a piece of work that speaks about violence is learned in the home. More than 3 million children witness both physical and verbal domestic abuse in their homes each year, in the literature that is read. And effects of witnessing domestic violence can include traumatic stress reflecting in higher levels of depression and anxiety, attention and learning problems, and greater likelihood of developing aggressive and antisocial behavior in their adulthood. And then violence is learned by being victimized by intimates, those close to you. In the U.S., nearly a million children in the United States were maltreated about a decade ago. And the experience of child abuse and neglect increases the likelihood of arrest as juveniles and by 53%. So this is quite a phenomenal increase. And committing a violent crime by 38%. So there is very much big evidence out there of why we should prevent these things happening. And then violence is learned from peers. 1 in 7 school children is either bullied or has been victim of a bully. And between 10 and 30% of teens experience violence while dating. There's just some international literature that speaks to the experiences of violence between intimates and peers. And then there's the age-old, and especially within the context of youth, whilst we are looking at child prevention, but children grow up to become youth. So we've done a study about some time ago in schools where we said that the nature of the injury has been more to the head. The head, in a way, depicts that there's a disregard for the person. If we see a lot of these type of injuries to the head in particular schools that we've monitored. And we had written at the time a report to the Department of Education indicating that there is a potential of a violent type of behavior of primary school children. That the type of injuries that was experienced, more than 50% of those injuries was of an intentional nature, which had, if we see evidence perhaps thereof, physically manifestation, we have seen a scourge of school violence erupting within the latter half of the last decade. So, having said that, we're looking also at that 50% of youth homicide victims have elevated blood alcohol levels, as do 50% of youth who commit homicide. So there's this alcohol that is in our faces all the time. We have not criminalized it. We often decriminalize it, even because it's a social accepted policy. Having said about alcohol and drugs being in our faces all the time, I will later on elaborate why we are, since the years 1999, there's been a system that was introduced looking at the concerns of violence and injury in the country, and consortium was brought together, and they looked at three particular things, the first being trauma and drug abuse in injury, its relationship to injury. Then they looked at the morbidity study, which is non-fatal injuries, which is about 4 to 5 times more than those, obviously, who you find in medical legal laboratories that have died as a consequence of the injury. So there's a lot of burden placed upon the sectors of care, health care, if you survive your injury, and obviously when you die as well. So, and then youth gangs are responsible for a disproportionate share of criminal offenses, both violent and non-violent. So when we look at factors that protect youth, we're looking at relationship with responsible adults, we're looking at positive school experiences, we're looking at plans and dreams, future orientations, and ability to control impulses. That was done by a search institute some time ago. So all these information is out there for us to enact upon, but bringing them all together, that's where the challenge lies. Now, I just want to touch a base on a system that I mentioned to you just a few sentences ago. The National Injury Mortality Surveillance System was an attempt as part of the injury consortium to measure where injuries happen, how they happen, when they happen, and to get sort of a face to injury. The why of how these injuries happen often eludes us because of its difficulty of data collection. But this surveillance system was introduced to describe the incidents, causes, and consequences, particularly of non-natural death that is subjected to medical legal investigation. That means you find them laying in your mortuary, and you ask them to speak to us in how can we prevent you getting to a mortuary prematurely. And then to prioritize injury and violence prevention actions. So what should we be doing first? We can't do everything all at one time. Children is dying of drowning. Children gets burned to death. Children gets molested. Children gets knocked down by cars. I mean, there's only such a small piece of cake to give out, but there's such a lot of audience, a lot of problems that we need to address. And then monitor longitudinal change as we implement our prevention actions, and then evaluate possibilities of direct and indirect violence and injury. So may you just permit me to go into this National Injury Mortality Surveillance System and to look at one particular year. I'm looking at particularly the 2007 national coverage. The mortuaries has grown ever since. It's no more 21 mortuaries. It's about in the region of about 40 to 60 mortuaries around the country. So they're coming on board on the system. Other mortuaries are just not in a position to do so yet. They haven't got the infrastructure. They don't have manpower. So the system has, when we thought the system was going to be finished two years after that it started, it somehow had maintained itself with baseline budgets and with volunteerism. So what we could get out of the system is something better than nothing. We know that in Department of Home Affairs, 60,000 deaths occur every year, between 60 and 80, I think. 80,000 deaths occur every year in a non-natural way. So people die prematurely, which shouldn't happen. And this system captures over 50% of this. Now, I said something is better than nothing. If you didn't know, you wouldn't be able to go and do implementation of prevention. So if we look at what the apparent manner of death, now when we say apparent manner, the death, official death of the particular deceased only becomes really known, in this particular case, the non-natural death, only becomes known 5 or 6 years down the line when the court rules what the actual death was after the inquest has been done and all investigations has been tied up. So if you want to do prevention waiting for the court records, then you have missed the boat 5, 6 years down the line. So the idea was to circumvent or short circuit by asking forensic pathology services, what do they think was the cause of death? And when we do that, we then refer to this as an apparent manner. And then later on, research will prove or disprove that these forensic pathology services was quite accurate in their prediction. So if we look at the apparent manner of death for all ages over this period of time, then we looked at what's striking in our faces every time is the big scourge of violence and traffic. These are the big main issues for us in the country. Violence in itself is something, as you said before, the preventable as such as traffic, but we need to take bites that we can children, then you can see there's a considerable drop in just the pie in looking at the disproportionate way of how transport and unintentional injuries among children plays itself out. Unintentional in this case would be things like drowning and burns, and transport equally, nearly as equal, responsible for children deaths. But there's this 10% unacceptable violence that is perhaps small enough, but these are only percentages. You know, when it comes to a child, you don't talk about percentages of numbers. You talk about an individual child. So one has to resensitize yourself all the time that whilst we are playing here with numbers and percentages, and I show all sorts of fancy graphs with different colors, that there's a need on the ground of prevention, especially around violence, and that's why we flag them all the time and keep it on the agenda. As we grow the age range between 0 and 19, then you see suddenly there's a sudden move from 10% to twice or more than twice to 25% violence jumping out of that. And if I look at the next graph, you could see close on to 50% if I look at young people between the ages of 15 and 29 that violence are taking their lives or responsible for taking their lives. That is nearly twice the amount of transport injuries. Now, my next slide is on violent death by age. And that gives us an indication of that our country, and particularly our economy, may be threatened by this, and is threatened by it, and its effect is felt. Because suddenly there's an upswing from 14 to 50. That age range from 15 to 19, although it's a collective age range. But you can see quite a dramatic rise in violent death among youth, speaking in young adults, where they should have been contributing towards the economy of the country. They find themselves not with us no more. And this is this we unfortunately have to show every time to keep it on the agenda, saying that our economy is being threatened and constantly threatened by the scourge of violence. And then we look at what is used to cause these scourges. We look at nearly 40% due to sharp objects, such as knives, bottle corks, and everything. And then followed by firearm. Even though the firearm law is in, there's still quite a proportion of firearm violence. And then blunt force, not far off of the firearms. And less than 5% due to strangulation. And then we look at ourselves on the right and saying that our ratios are exacerbated, comparing sharp force to firearms, that there's a lot of this type of murders taking place using sharp objects. I'll probably just want to just look at the figures and not just spread out statistics to you, but look at what I would like to touch on really later on. And what I thought I'll break down is the external cause of fatal youth violence. Now, when I speak about youth, I'm also usually including children in this regard. And you can see, obviously, the cases of the less than five, there's a large contingency of blunt murders, and there's firearms even for children under the age of five, and sharp objects. And other would be other sort of types of violence that was perpetrated on these children, pushed off or falls or abandoned, thrown in sewerages, as we have learned in Gauteng and Western Cape recently. And then as we grow, 5 to 9 is a particular concern, that over 30% of kids between 5 and 9 is murdered by firearm. And then as you go older, more blunt objects, and older, you know, there's this knives and sharp object homicides. I said perhaps we have, there's some sort of, although we can't really look at it from that point, you see there's a downward trend of violence in the country. But it's still unacceptably high compared to the global averages and other countries in our SADC region. That violence, while it's showing somehow a downward trend, particularly in Pretoria and in Durban, there's sort of a easing out in Johannesburg and in Cape Town. Later data obviously will illustrate whether it perhaps reached a low and now it's going up again. Fatal violence, that's by scene and by sex, you can see violence is a gendered scourge, and particularly, and this is where I would like to make an appeal while we are sitting in front of the committee of women, child, and people living with disabilities. I wanted to make an appeal to us men that we are an endangered species, and we certainly have to consider looking at that with a different lens. When I say an endangered species, it's mostly men that die. And while our studies are now going into areas where we would like to see who exactly are the perpetrators, because your perpetrator really, again, gets only ratified by court of law. And that's 5-6 years down the line. And you can't do prevention work like that. And then the story of alcohol, the age-old story that will never die, and whilst there's lots of movement happening in South Africa at the moment, in different groups, Safer South Africa initiatives, the liquor bills, and everything coming in to be able to stem the tide of the effect of alcohol on violence and on other scourges of injury. And you can see that... where firearm is concerned, there's over 40% of those who used the firearm were alcohol positive. The bluish, grey, or light area in the bottom, referring that there was no alcohol, although tested. And the upper limit is where the person was inebriated, drunk, smoor drunk. But you can see there's quite a large association. People in research terms don't say talk about association, because if you have association, then you can go and make a case for for preventing it, because you can directly say that alcohol is the cause for sharp object deaths. So if there's alcohol around in excess, it will be most likely that there would be violence. So we can only say that there's some sort of associative factors, and in this particular case with sharp objects and alcohol. And you can also see quite a large proportion of alcohol positivity in those who were killed with blunt force. Now, coming to different areas. The National Injury Mortality Surveillance System was meant to be, as its name indicates, national. That means it has to look at all provinces. What we found, though, is because of this particular type of system honing in on forensic pathology, and all medical legal laboratories or mortuaries are not really in position, you find that in the latter years, that you could only get full coverage, for example, in Gauteng, in Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga mostly rural, and then also in Western Cape. So those are the only three provinces currently where, as we speak, that we can get full coverage of every death that happened non-naturally in these provinces. So you can't really make inferences. You can say numbers. You can perhaps look at proportions of a denominator, but you can't really say what the true effect of violence is if you don't have collected the quality type of data. So what I've done is I've looked at these four cities where there is, so therefore the system's limitation, not by its own means, but by other means. It can only really look at urbanized, urban-centered violence. And if we look at Durban, Capet, Cape Town, Capet, Tswane, and Johannesburg, this gives us a more realistic picture of what happens in cities. But we need to allow the system to grow, and the system will also obviously grow if there's political will, if there's resources, if there's funding, and buy-in into such a system. And you can see that there's inter-city differences, and these cities are main cities within provinces where it plays its role out and could mimic and give an idea of what happens in provinces. Firearms being right on top and sharp objects in Cape Town and second in Durban, Tswane, and Johannesburg. Now, having said all that, it's all fine, and every year we have brought out reports, and which was lapped up by the media, and it was quite a media hype every year, and of course there's this whole big debate whose statistics are correct. Is it the Medical Research Council? Is it the police? And we don't get into that debate because certainly it's not the same. The police reports on murder in conjunction with a certain financial year that they cover. So one has to be very careful how you interpret these two sets of data. There is now an attempt for been for a long time though, but just last week two of my colleagues were met with relevant stakeholders in Gauteng with Zwandile Petros and others to try and bring together, make sense of how does the data speak to each other and how they interact, so that we start to get to the point of not talking to each, against each other, but talking with one voice, so that we collectively can violence prevention. Now, I just want to bring in at this juncture the particular program that we find ourselves in. As I said, I represent the program, and I have colleagues and senior researchers that's very, very well, very known worldwide within this particular sector of violence prevention, and with the World Health Organization. This particular program called the Medical Research Council, UNISA's Safety and Peace Promotion Research Unit, is tasked with conducting transdisciplinary research to champion violence and injury prevention, as well as peace and safety promotion. And also then is there to develop appropriate tools to assess the magnitude, which I showed you now, trends and occurrences of crime, injuries, and violence over time, and to promote safety and peace. And then to study risks, to identify what works best, how to control for injuries and violence, and to encourage research translation. Which makes it like now that we would like to see having a relationship with this, with Parliament and with the committee in informing you as more and more work gets completed, and in a way that is assimilated and for interpretation for action and feedback, and to build primary prevention and safety peace promotion research interventions among researchers, policy drivers, community-based workers and practitioners. Now, one of these a very large study that has been undertaken now and hugely funded by the University of South Africa is called the Ukupepa study. I believe that, as I said, this is an information sharing, and at some stage want to make a more formal presentation on this particular initiative. Say that this initiative is a multi-country, multi-level research study on child injury prevention and safety promotion. And it's the first of its kind, it's unique, and this will work towards reducing injury rates, especially among children, and in developed countries like Uganda, South Africa, Mozambique, Australia, and Bangladesh, and others. Kepepa, if I understand correctly, means safety. I always said, thought, oh, Kepepa. So I thought it was paper. I must write articles and reports. But there's three aims: to initiate, implement, and evaluate, maintain safety promotion and demonstration programs locally, to facilitate and convene African-centered injury prevention and safety promotion group, to ask scholars to generate critical African-centered knowledge and knowledge systems, and then to stimulate network of injury prevention and safety promotion services based through agencies that will both draw on and act as resource to develop skills linked to technological improvement, innovation, and contextual relevance. Whatever we do, we want to do it in context of the country and of Department of Health and other departments that is stakeholders in this particular prevention action. I want to speak to this. So the first goal of the next particular intervention action that we are busy with, it's called the quest for an integrated strategic framework around violence and injury prevention. We just completed a day another national meeting. Tasneem was yesterday was present. The particular idea is, and the Medical Research Council was mandated by the Department of Health to bring together different ministries as a collective to develop policy around an integrated strategy for violence and injury prevention. While I'm saying this, and it's not that the Ministry of Women and Children and people, persons living with disabilities was excluded. This is an initiative that has only started recently, so there is the visit to the ministry as well in relation to the prevention of injuries and violence among children. You can see on the next slide, it's quite a bit busy, but there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done. This is just a draft template, which still is to be consulted on and consulted with. The vision is to work together to live in a safe and peaceful environment, free from injuries and violence. The mission is promoting safety and peace through evidence, coordination, and collaboration. There's guiding principles, there's goals, and there's objectives, and as you can see, there will be a large focus, especially on the cross-cutting key action areas on children and integration of cycling of violence. And if we look at the particular one aspect of child abuse, if we look at the NIMS that reported that over 1,000 homicides to boys and nearly 900 to girls under the age of 14 in the 2007 report. SAPS reported 417 sexual offences between the year 2009 and 2010. Well, sorry, 27,417 sexual offences, which is alarming, which is increased by 36%. You see there's key distal factors. You look at proximal factors. You look at strategies to be able to prevent these things happen, and then you also, with gaps I identified, look at service delivery responsibilities, and then we look at lead departments. Now, having said that again, this is a start of a process and negotiations and consultation. It's meant to happen with all ministries relevant to child prevention, injury prevention. So at this moment, perhaps one can go on and on, but Perhaps I want to stop at this juncture if there's perhaps any questions and concerns.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Donson, for the presentation. It is really informative. We have learned a lot from it. I can see members are agitated. They really want to speak. You know, you've touched them. I don't know if members would want me to go back again and outline the purpose or the objective of this presentation. If not, it's fine. I can then allow members to ask questions. But I thought maybe I should just quickly just mention, you know, that the purpose is to draw information in relation to the issues that children face regarding violence, and that MRC can give us an overview of violence issues that children face around South Africa. If you followed the presentation, I think it has addressed that. And as you also know, that violence is one of our common priorities. You know, we are here to fight violence. So I thought I should maybe just give the overview of the presentation, then allow members to then engage. Honorable Mokoro, Honorable Worth, Honorable Makala, and Mam Kutani will be last.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This report is mind-provoking. I'm going to ask a question, and that question, if I'm out of order, you will rule me out of order, Chair. The central point here is violence against children. And in terms of our history, it's a complete new phenomenon. We were children ourselves. I'm 76 years of age today. But I was not just born and become 76 years old. I went through a process, a very lengthy process of being brought up by people, by my parents, and the community within which I grew. But if we look into that situation, I can't experience anything that I could say it was violent against children. I know children would be reprimanded. Is it reprimanded? Reprimanded. But it would be a reprimand which is not what we say in present terms as violence. It was a reprimand. So the child does something wrong, and you don't just reprimand the child from the onset. You warn the child. You warn the child to a point where you say, no, you don't want to hear. To put it in situation, they would say, how about you ukwa ka ditsebe re ka ukwisa ka mmele. You don't want to hear with the ears, but will inflict some pain in your body so that you listen. This was the type of reprimand that we know of. And the bringing up of the child, the security of the child, the safety of the child, the responsibility to bring up this child, the protection of this child, all these elements, as far as I'm concerned, were embedded in the minds of the parents as well as the community. But here we find a new complete situation now, which I want to know, has the research ever thought of looking into the violence of children as against the rights of children? I don't know whether I'm clear enough. To me, it seems as if the violence of children grows as a result of the rights of children. child was embedded in the parents' mind and the community. So there was no threat to the children. It was a clean bringing up. If your child does something there, out there, out of the home, and one elderly person see your child doing something wrong, he had the right, or she had the right, to reprimand that child. And you would not get the parents coming and putting up a fight, and even going to say, this is not your child, it's my child. It would be accepted, and if you, the child, you go back home, you report. Your parents will even themselves further reprimand you. Now, what comes into my mind is the protection of the child by the parents, has it not been removed from the mind of the parents and the community by the legislation? That's my question I'm asking. And I'm asking whether the research has ever looked into that and probably find out the comparison between these two situations. That is my question, Chair. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair, for you. I'd also like to thank you for your presentation. I'm just interested in some of the statistics here. City comparisons. We got here, for example, Durban. We got Durban. Let's take Durban, Cape Town. Virtually the same numbers. So you could you can compare them. 1205 against 1436. There you have firearms in Durban. Now I'm thinking of Western Cape, mainly gang-related violence. When you say sharp object, I think of stabbings normally with knife. What these figures give you, it's just nicely reversed. 51.3 and 51.1. as against 37.6 and 37.3. So it looks like here they want to save on bullets and they stab, and in Durban they use firearms. It's just interesting that it's exactly sort of reversed on those two figures. That's the one. The other one is figures here. I don't see much with a relation to drugs, which play an very increasing role, as a lot of violence is perpetrated by drugs. Here we have leading external causes of fatal violence for youth by blood alcohol concentration. Drugs are always that more difficult to trace. Now, if you don't do a post-mortem or have a forensic expert there within 24 hours, that is out. Like my brother's son, who's brain damaged from drugs, and he was in a place that got burnt down. And they couldn't prove either way, whether he had been drugged or not, because they did not do tests. Nobody thought to do that. So the drug-related part is, I don't think, enough documentation, because I think that plays a big part. Then we had figures here where there's a tremendous increase sexual offences against children under 18 years, increase of 36.1. Don't you think that part of that increase, tremendous increase, is also ascribed to the fact that probably there is a greater awareness now that matters relating to sexual offences are now being reported, as possibly in the past they were covered up, and it's becoming that could also be a reason? I'm just asking for your comment on that. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you with the research work that was presented. What I want to know, Chair, is how do you get in touch and involve the rural part of the country with the information and statistics, or they are not involved in the statistics? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable West and Honorable Magal covered me about the rural statistics, but the presentation of the central. I don't know, Chairperson. I really don't know when the presenter talked about the natural death. I don't know whether I'm here clearly, if I'm mistaken. He said that you get the result after 6 years or 8 years. But, Chairperson, I don't know. I'm a nurse by profession and a qualified one. When the doctor say this one maybe died on the hospital, and he diagnosed or she said that no, this one is a natural death. So what where does it come from? And then you said in other way around that it takes about 6 to 8 years to get the results of the natural death. Because sometimes you know that the natural death is caused by somebody who's just is sick for normal sickness and says that it's a natural death. So I don't know what is it in the way around about the researchers. How did you know about that? Thank you.
Thank you. A few issues from my side. I think what is most important for me is prevention. Because violence starts in within family units, in communities where we live in. So my most important issue here is that prevention. I think that what is it? Violence can be prevented. And I've also learned that apart from health-related deaths, there's a number of death-related issues through accident and violence, you know, on children. I've learned that today. And then, like I said, that violence can be prevented, but I think it can only be prevented through awareness. And I was thinking, what's the possibility of the NCOP, maybe in partnership with, is it UNISA, MRC, the South African Medical Research Council, and other interested stakeholders that we can form part. I mean, we can form a partnership and at the national level, and maybe raise awareness in areas that does not have, what is this? You said there are areas that do not have coverage. Maybe focusing on those areas, especially the deep end of rural areas, you know. Like you said, that there's no coverage in such areas. What is that possibility? Is it doable? I think yes, it is. The main issue here, it will be resources, but all of us, we have an obligation to prevent children, so I think we can start working towards that. Men as an endangered species, I tend to be agreeing with you. It seems like we are reinventing the wheel. We are promoting girl child this, girl child that, and forgetting about the boy child, instead of embracing both of them, you know, and empowering and protecting both of them. But now we are definitely doing that, you know. As government, I think we need to look into that. The issue about children attacking and killing each other, there was special assignment at some point, you know, covered that. It was really scary, you know, to find boys at the age of 9 years attacking a 7-year-old, molesting him, burning him with cigarettes, and stabbing him. I don't know if how many of you saw that TV. It was on a special assignment, né? I think it was even repeated at some point, you know. You ask yourself, why do children get such evil spirits and do that? But if you listen to the history of this boy who did that, it's because of he was abused by his own father. He used to do those things to him until one day he had to then practice that into other children. Having listened to Ndate Mokgoro's remark or question, I also feel that maybe at some point we need to get someone who will come and present on the rights of children. Yeah. if possible, that we can engage, you know, to check where are the loopholes, how best can we strengthen that, and maybe get experts, especially people who are independent, to come and advise us and see whether that law is still on the right track. And lastly, I think we also need to prepare a statement, because there's no way that we're going to put this as a debate in the House, but to prepare a statement for the sitting, maybe for next week, in relation to the launch and the recognition of the Children's Rights Week. No, the Children's Week. Is this week? Yeah, I think even next week it won't be late. So we need that, maybe a statement, two or three members can just stand up as, what is this, a motion with notice and a motion without notice. Yeah, maybe during that time we can try and slot in this issue. Yeah, that is all. Thank you very much. You may respond.
Sure.
Oh, Dr. Mohoro again?
No, I'm not asking a question,
okay.
But I just want to emphasize on the issue that you brought up, Sean.
I'm not asking a question, but I just want to emphasize on the issue of the boy child and the girl child. You know, I think we must be very careful. If we promote only the girl child, that might result into sour relationship between the girl child and the boy child. We must be very, very careful with that. Really, thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
I probably want to now admit that I came here with great trepidation and great anxiety, but I want to thank you for the opportunity, because I think this, although we have engaged in different other forums, but I think this is a very important forum, and whilst you were speaking, it therefore brought a bit of relief to my soul and to my heart. When you spoke of the norms, the cultural norms of the past, of how when we were naughty, you dared not come and tell your father that the principal, your teacher, has hit you, because he will give you another hiding. Because why are you disrespectful to your elders and your peers? So I prescribe to that norms, cultural norms, which I think have gone by the wayside. Different ways. In some families, I still think there's very, very good norms in certain societies, but there's an influence in other institutions or means or instruments that disaggregate. The child gets exposed to this at school or in their friendship circle or the other, where they go in clubs and all sorts of things. And there's sort of this permissive, you know, the perhaps irresponsible parent. He hasn't got time, he's working too hard, you know, the latest age of technology development is supposed to give us more time to have leisure, but now we fill up that time with other things, and we perhaps, not perhaps, definitely, rob the child of a caring, responsible parent, because he indulges in the things, or perhaps he feels that he was deprived of the past, and now wants to indulge in things which then takes away the responsibility to the child. You give the child a credit card, you go enjoy yourself and give them money. So these are my response in the first instance of thinking about this was that what came first, now the chicken or the egg, you know. Did the legislation come as a result of the degradation of social norms within society, or was the incidences that was covered up, as you were saying, all these years, that have now come to the fore, that activists and legislators and policymakers said, no, we must do something about this. And, you know, rallied behind this and said this is important for us to do. So those are the debates that we may be sitting with. But I still prescribe to bringing back those very norms, because those are best practices. As best practice has worked. I think we all are, in more ways than one, experienced in that and experienced to that. And the older we are, perhaps even more. And so here, this young boy comes and tells you about what's happening with violence and how we think we should solve violence. But love, concern, but we also see communities with these destructive problems happening. Children's on the road at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night because the parents wants to do some hanky-panky stuff. And the children, at least they have the respect for that, but the children then roams on the streets and gets all sorts of problems. There is bodies of work that has looked at that, but I would like to take it in conjunction with what you just requested. I would see and even place myself in the availability of that on behalf of my department and other stakeholders within the MRC to be a voice of informing, not only just in presentation, but also in a research translation way that makes it easy for you to assimilate, but in that you can take and run with it. You know, one has to go through all these scientific jargon that can become obstacle and barriers. One lady phoned me up. I'm very much in child prevention work, particularly drowning. My other colleagues doing burns, my other colleagues doing drugs, and lots of colleagues are doing violence. There's a lot of work happening and bodies of work happening. So I would see myself as a liaison, and to see that this committee is informed on a regular basis around work, and there's lots of things that can now be already translated for your assumption, for your consumption. I think I would want to move, if I'm using the right terminologies in the context, to place myself at that. That responsibility. Sure. So having answered you, or tried to understand that you would like to see an answer, have we looked at the child's right versus violence among children, and what are is the associations? What is that how I understand? Thanks very much. I think that I will get feedbacks as well on that. And then I've asked your question around the switch of the guns or firearms versus the sharp objects. I would imagine that there's perhaps even socioeconomics involved with violence. I don't know if they've done that yet. Another paper on the socioeconomics of violence in the country. I'm very much sure that I will be able to go and read up on that and click to answer the question that there may be more means of getting firearms in Durban, or all of Durban, with all due respect, didn't hand in the firearms. So there's that aspects of that. Maybe more guns are available, and even illegal guns. And those are the questions that's being answered by research, and that's an interesting phenomenon that probably just for your information, and if perhaps consumption also in a way for action, would want to get your feedback on that. So I'd make note of that as well. Yes. There's the other question that I just missed, which was Peter Borton, I think. Yes, whether you have said that it was, I think I tried to answer that perhaps more things are now reported because people are becoming more forthright, they're having rights now, so they can say, because before it was a shame, you mustn't say, you keep quiet, you don't say, you just live with this pain. There's more ability to be able to report and come forth and be transparent, because that's inevitable what the law or the acts are saying. You must be transparent, you must talk, you must let know. But I would like to just get prima facie evidence around the fact that it in fact was that we were able to explain that phenomenon.
And the element of drug abuse.
Yes, okay.
This is
drug-related or drug analysis because of manpower issues and, with the forensic chemistry laboratories. I went to physically visit them, and they showed me how these cases are all piled up in fridges because they just don't have the manpower, they don't have the funds coming their way to be able. People leave the system. It's sad because how can you stem a drug trade or drug tide in this country if you can't know? So what is it that is being highlighted? Even though the Medical Research Council has an alcohol and drug research group, and then we tie in with them as well because drugs and alcohol are related. The big problem for me that I at this stage want to say, if you look at there's a big scourge of PIC, was quite a big scourge over a short period of time, from 5% to 21%, and suddenly it's now in the 70-80%. Suddenly there's a new drug on the market now. They've become all this new model, right? The tick in, bring up from Unga, and then the different words, different parts of the country. So we can see them. We can see who's on drugs and so on. But we can't measure them for evidence base. So because the forensic chemistry cannot get it to us in a certain amount of time. Which I want then to link your answer to her answers around that 6-year waiting period. The 6-year waiting period is because if there was a drug offense, then they'll have to wait even for the drugs to come out. And that's not for natural death. Natural death gets certified, that's finished. It's when somebody dies under unnatural circumstances, then the Inquest Act of 1991 kicks in. So it's for non-natural death. That means I die, but there's not clear evidence why I die. So if somebody died of a heart attack or by a cardiac infarction, or a hemorrhage, then we know. But sometimes some of them died naturally, but we don't know, and they also get a post-mortem or medical legal investigation. And then they get declared natural by the forensic pathologist after investigation. And then you will find some natural deaths in the system, but your clear natural death that we know, we have got evidence, we've done, I've seen how they did when somebody's brain dead, how they do that testing. Yes, I grew up in the hospital, so this year's clinical, in the clinical sense. So I understand where you come from. So yes, there's a delay. There's a different backlog in the sort of evidence that comes to us. However, should we have done, say, for example, a research study, then you obviously would be able to dedicate having those samples tested at another laboratory. But for the state laboratories, it's a very, very big backlog. And I feel sorry for them, really. They aren't, like with other departments and other areas as well, that there is not, there's not enough money and enough resources. And if they get, you know, if they're very good, they get lapped up by private laboratories and so on. So we're sitting with a problem that we cannot stem the drug trade in South Africa because of that. And that's my view. Then I wanted to ask you about you asked about statistics and the engagement with statistics. Now, I thought that's exactly the point I'm making in line with what you said, that this committee gets informed from the Medical Research Council through the department, through my liaison with you, that you, on a regular basis, can connect with us and ask that you would get piece written specially for your consumption. That's how. So you can write an email, you can send an SMS, you can pick up the phone and say, I want to know how many children between the ages of such and such would die at the hand of a blunt object. That one would be able to pull that information out and make it consumption, you know, and put other things to it, you know, add the sources and the salt and the pepper. Say, and you can go do a presentation to somebody and say, stop this nonsense now. I know where it happens. I know when it happens and know how it happens. The only problem that we are still investigating and has to be done in small pockets is why. We don't always know why. It's like cancer. We don't know why a cell suddenly turns around and
say that alcohol is a causal factor, but it's an associative factor. So that's how my commitment to, so if you require statistical analysis or statistics about, somebody asked me the other day, how many people drown while surfing? A very difficult question, because now somebody had to ask when the person drowned, where did he drown? What was he doing while he was drowning? So you know those questions. But if you put all these things together, you get a nice picture. So if you want to know about KZN, and in particular Durban, I can only tell you about Durban. I'm trying to get the north of Durban because I think that's where a lot of information, rich information is laying, and we're not able to capture. It's not doing our part. Yes, there's political issues happening up there as well. We've tried. We certainly have tried. And it will not stop trying to be able to capture the whole of KZN. You asked a question that before you said about the overview, is particular mentioning of something which, as I said, my heart, the cockles of my heart warmed. Of saying that, I think what I said is that I would like to have an ongoing relationship through Tasneem even, because Tasneem would be in the child-centered work, and we can connect up. So I thought that would be a nice focal point.
Okay. Thank you very much. Our relationship has started from today. But you know, something that did come to my mind to say that a lot of work around children's rights and children's protection, it's been done. The only thing is that people are working in solo. What is your relationship with UNICEF, for example?
Yeah.
There's no relationship with UNICEF.
Yeah.
Do you have?
Can I? I just probably, as I said, I'm touching on, and I have to be careful of. If I give too much, they call information overload, and then that's why I wanted to just tread the waters very carefully. Our unit, the part of our unit is called the Center for Peace Action, which is a World Health Collaborating Center, not only just a World Health Collaborating Center on Violence. Promotion, but it's also a world collaborative certifying center. That means other countries within Africa will have to come through this department to be certified that they are safe, they're doing good safety work, and they get rates for that. And the World Health Organization acknowledges them. Our linkages with UNICEF is particularly at this moment around child pedestrians in the traffic. So yes, we have connections with UNICEF and through the World Health Organization and with the CDC in America and with the National Research Fund. So there's a lot of linkages which I have not mentioned here. So it's a very complicated network. As I said, with our current approach now, as Nima testified, we have now developing this integrated strategy and discussion around prevention of among other childhoods.
I wish one day to have a sort of like a summit where we invite everyone who's working around children's issues, you know, to come and present to us and also share their experiences and maybe see how best they can help each other to avoid competition and duplication. Because I think somewhere there's a solution. We can get a solution of all these challenges that we're facing, especially around children's abuse and all that, you know. For an example, what is the role of social development in what you do? What UNICEF is doing as well. You know, there's one department that we never take cognizance of, the Department of Arts and Culture and the Department of Sports as well. You know, I think at some point at the committee we need to invite them urgently so as well. to come and give us the report as to what is it that they're doing, keeping by keeping our children off the streets, off the drugs and all that. So those are the things that require proper planning. You know, I think we can only achieve that if we plan properly and try and get everybody on board. Yeah, but basically we thank you very much for your presentation, and you're welcome to come and present to us at any given time. Please go and tell others. Nobody will chop your head off in Parliament. Definitely you will come alive and you will still leave this institution alive. You know, you don't even have to have any anxieties when you come here. Just relax. You see, it was a very friendly meeting. Yeah, you know, why I'm saying that is because this morning I had to give someone a call, and when I said Parliament, oh my God, what have I done? Nobody's going to kill you from Parliament. You know, the only thing is that we want people to do the right things. It's our obligation. It's within our mandate to monitor, you know, how departments are operating and functioning. So you're welcome. We thank you very much for your time and for the good presentation.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Member, can I request that we then deal with the second item, which is the consideration and adoption of our standing report? There are errors on the Bartman and to Tuzela Kazeta, we have severe printing errors. So I'm going to request that we don't go through that, we leave that. And we consider the oversight visit to the Limpopo and Gauteng provinces. And the Gauteng province. Okay. Madia, can you take us through? Okay. Before we get into the details, let's go through page by page. You want us to wait for other members?
Okay, so you just come in here. I looked through these for spelling errors or grammatical errors. But I must say, I found them spot on. The only one, obviously, I cannot comment on the visit to Limpopo and Gauteng. I wasn't on that visit. But the other two, I've had a look to see if they're factual, you know, what we saw, and I must say they're very good. They're excellent.
Other members? I must also indicate that I had an opportunity to go through the Gauteng and the Limpopo in our presence. They're also factual. And no grammatic errors. Even the template that was used here is correct. It's a true reflection of what transpired. I don't think we'd even need Nadia to take us through because, yeah, it's a true reflection. I think, Honorable West, you were reflecting to the first report that I said I needed. I want us to withdraw it. I will not necessarily highlight areas where there are printing errors, but I've read it, that one, it has got serious printing errors, you know. They duplicated some pages and numbers, and so it's a bit complicated, that one. We can't deal with that one. Then can I request that we approve, to get a mover for the Gauteng and Limpopo. Mamtikani was not there. Mamtikani was not there. West was not there. Mashamaite was there. Mokoro was there. How do you deal with that now? Mokoro, where's Mokoro? Okay, let's keep this one. And wait for Mr. Mokoro for the approval. And then say, okay, this is another one. The KwaZulu Natal, Eastern Cape and KwaZulu Natal. Oh, I don't want to remember this week, it was hectic, ne? Yo. I've also gone through this as well. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Mr. West was there, Mr. Kani was there. You have any more? No. This is next? Mkoro was there, West was there. Moshamaita was there. Yeah. Is it now? But you're better now, man. You look good now. Mr. West, is there any issue that you'd want to raise here?
No.
Okay.
I propose that this one's in order. You just have to give somebody to second it.
To second
it. Yeah.
KwaZulu Natal and
okay.
While we're still waiting for Mr. Mokoro to settle.
Thank you. In touch. Thank you.
Mr. Mokoro?
Chair.
No, we considering the report. We are not going to deal with the Sarah Bartman because there are printing errors on that one. We've withdrawn the report. We are concentrating on the Gauteng and Limpopo, and you were present on that one, so we wanted you to. But if you move, then who's going to second? Oh. No,
what
was not part of this one, the Gauteng.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Okay. Eastern Cape and KwaZulu Natal. Let's pass this one for now.
I'm seconding it. I'm sorry.
Are you sure you know what is it that you're seconding, Mr.
Yeah, the report of
of Eastern Cape and KwaZulu Natal. Yeah. Yes, I'm seconding it. Chair.
Yes. Dispose that one. Now the problem is with Gauteng and Limpopo. It was myself, Honorable Mukhoro, and Mashamaite is not here. Oh, I can second, okay. Mr. Mukhoro, can you propose so that I second?
Chair, thank you very much. I propose the acceptance of the report of our visit to Limpopo and Gauteng. Thank you.
Bye, thank you. I second. Okay, that's it. Two reports, one still outstanding. I quickly want us to go through the committee's report in 5 minutes. Not the report, man. Program. Sorry, program.
Oof.
5 minutes.
Those parties reporting to the board of the
way before the time, and it was a wealth of information that they gave, and it didn't give me the sufficient time to compete. So it's easier from my side if the committee actually can set a position on that.
Nadia, this is June month. It's youth month. There's nothing on the program relating to youth activities or youth debates. I want that to be covered at some point, or make statements as motions for members just to present in the House, raise awareness. But I know at some point we will debate on that. Ne?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely we'll have to debate on that. It's June. Ne? For the month of July, maybe overlapping to August, I want us to seriously consider the Disability Summit. I don't know how far we're with that. It's for the second year that I've always said we need to host that. The oversight, we've agreed that at least once a quarter we must undertake an oversight. I want UNICEF to formally come to this meeting. I want the Department of Arts and Culture, Sports, its agent, and Social Development. Maybe we should have them in one meeting as well. So that this one doesn't come this week, prevent, and the other one comes. We need to change the way Parliament runs. You know, I don't agree with the system. It's an old system, but it's not. It's a toothless exercise, you know, if I may say, you know, because we get this one coming today, information, the other one coming next year. You know what, Maria, we need to, the way we plan, we need to start getting clustering people, you know, so that we get information.
Things going.
Yeah, things going as well. We need to start clustering people. And August, Kathleen, can you say what you are proposing for August?
Thank you, Chi. Just based on what Chi was saying this morning about collaborating with other stakeholders, we are going to propose researchers from the PCA and I are working on perhaps doing a child rights training workshop for members, and then also perhaps including people like the Medical Research Council and UNICEF to do presentations around the most updated data and in relation to rights and responsibilities. And then we also want to look at, I know members attended last year, a gender responsive budgeting workshop. So we're thinking of including a child responsive budgeting workshop as well. So when members look at the budget in future, you look at it also through a child focused lens. But this, I will formally present a proposal to the two members about this this workshop that will take place probably in August.
Thanks for that. Yeah, we need to start planning for that. Ne? Okay, yeah, that is all from my side. I don't know if members would want to add anything in relation to what we are proposing and what is currently before us. Thanks. Honorable Mukhoro.
Thank you, Chair. No, I don't want to add anything on what has already been proposed. But I'm a bit concerned about this concern of you and I about the girl child and the boy child as to what is the status of our concern going to be. Because to me, this is a serious issue, really, because you don't only hear it from people here in Panama, even outside. People talk about this thing that why is the emphasis only on the girl child and they have been taken to work and the boy child is just being neglected. Now, with you know, to me, this can really start a not a very good relationship between girl child and the boy child. Now, my point is, we are concerned here. We are in an official parliamentary committee that deals directly with these things. What is the status of that concern going to be?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is to emphasize the issue of oversight. That is our mandate.
Thank you. I think so far the damage has been done, but at least we can put some control measures, you know, and we are Parliament, we can make laws, we can say, we can advise, or we can recommend, but I think we need to, from now
now on, the attitude should change, you know, about promoting girls and all that. We need to formally, when we make statements, when we do our presentations, when we do whatever, when we do our, when we present our speeches, it has to be both girl and boy child.
Touching from both sides.
Touching from both sides, you know. I think we need to do that, because now it's just a reverse, and I'm afraid if we don't support boy children, we are going to face a serious danger, because now really it's unacceptable the way it has been carried. So we've got the power to reverse that. It's not too late. The damage has been done, but it's not too late, you know. Because the boys are the ones who commit violence, who smoke drugs, who do, you know, all sorts of bad things. You know, they are easily attracted into those stuff. So if we can find a way of trying to redress the damage that has been done, I think we will definitely be on track. Ma'am, I agree with you. Oversight is very important. But it also doesn't have to be oversight for the sake of oversight. It must have content in it. And even the way we conduct our oversight, I think we need to change. Because when we go in provinces, people once expect answers from us. You know, we need to start holding departments accountable, taking them to those areas where we are going, you see. So that when people ask questions, they should be there. Yeah. So we are planning. But the last, the our oversight that we did this time, I think it was okay. Definitely, we nearly got there, but Maggie, I don't know if you still have that proposal. You remember at some point we said, as and when we go for oversight, you remember at some point we discussed about how we want our oversight to be conducted and to be structured. So we've discussed that, you know, to say we will follow the following. So management committee will have to look into that. Right? All right, so we've come to the end of our meeting. Thank you very much for your time and your patience.